Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats, silence your cell phones, for you are now listening to Much Ado About Wrestling!
Welcome, fair listeners, to Much Ado About Wrestling, the podcast that always gets 5 stars, 6 in the Tokyo Dome. I think I may have used that before in one of these episodes, but we'll see.
We're going to let it slide.
Yeah. I'm one half of your scholarly presenters, Andrew Terrence Caberline, and with me, as always, is the critically acclaimed Tyler Ward. Tyler, how are you?
I am great, and I'm not going to do a cool rap like the Acclaim does on AEW, because I cannot.
And a few people can, I feel like.
A few people can. I'm going to be honest, when Caster was first doing that gimmick, I did not like it, but man, that man is funny.
You got to commit to a gimmick like that for it to
work. He has some really good lines
bit.
That he's been dropping lately.
Yeah. Oh, man. It's been a little while since the audience has heard our dulcet tones, but we are back. I'm vaccinated. You're vaccinated, correct?
Yep.
Okay, good. I didn't want to say that and then have it wrong. So we are hurtling. Yep, that's what that means. We are hurtling towards summer, which means it's time for us to do our annual best of lists that you've all been voting on. And I'm excited to get into it. You're excited to get into it. We're excited to give away a $50 Pro Wrestling Tees gift card to one lucky member of the voting audience.
Here comes the money.
What do you think the worst thing that you could spend $50 on Pro Wrestling Tees is?
Oh, man. I don't know if it's still up there, but like... if there's like a Joey Ryan shirt, that's a waste of your money.
Yeah, don't do that. I feel like do they have some of the old Val Venus t-shirts that really like are questionable? The ones that look like semen kind of.
Might need to go on a deep dive after this.
Yeah. So don't buy any of those things. Buy something good if you are the person who wins. And of course we are going to reveal that at the end of this episode. Don't skip ahead to the end. Listen through all of this. You're gonna have a great time. So again, we're going to get into the top 10 matches and wrestlers of the year, which as we define it is the day after WrestleMania 36 through the end of night 2 of WrestleMania 37.
Mm-hmm.
And that is our wrestling year as the Aztecs had it in their calendar. I'm sure they would have been a society that was super into wrestling, right?
Oh, like, yeah, definitely.
I feel like with the murder ball type things that I feel like were all over our textbooks as children about the Aztecs. I couldn't tell you anything else about their probably amazing society. It was just like they played games to the death.
Yeah. Would Roman be over is the question.
Only as a bad guy. Only when he was like, I'm an Inca and I'm coming.
I'm the tribal
you.
Chief. And they're like, okay.
Actually, maybe it would have played really, really well. That's okay. We're going to get into that. We know these episodes tend to go long, so I'm sorry that we have to do some news roundup at the top, but there were a lot of newsworthy
items. This is another way of how I realized it's been quite a bit since we've recorded because there's so much damn news.
Yeah. We got 4 items we're going to talk about, but we're only going to talk about them for like 2 to 3 minutes a piece. I say now, and then we're going to fast forward to when we're like 35 minutes into this episode.
Right?
Yeah. Is there one that you want to start with, Tyler, that you feel the most passionate about?
I'll go ahead and start with this one because I saw another update to it today. In carrying on with their recent tradition of spring cleaning, WWE has made some more cuts today. It's been announced, but this is specifically coming from NXT. This week they have let the following names go from NXT, and I think these ones are all confirmed. Alexander Wolf, Ezra Juge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Brandy Loren, Vanessa Bourne, Jessamine Duke, Kavita Devi, mm-hmm. The referees, Jake Clemens and Drake Wirtz. And the update that I just saw is supposedly they have finally let go of Velveteen Dream.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I'm furious.
I don't know if that
Googling
one's confirmed,
now.
But that they think that's the next one.
I mean, the two people who I see reporting on that when I search him right now are Bleacher Report and SB Nation. So those are pretty big places to report that if they didn't think that it was absolutely happening. Wow. Man, I thought that Drake Wirtz would be the most problematic person released, but it's a real battle between those two.
Yeah, it's neck and neck right there.
Yeah. Okay, so I was going to ask then, what is the headline from these releases? But now I guess Velveteen Dream might be the biggest release here.
That might be, yeah. My headline was just going to be, well, hold on, we ain't done yet.
Yeah, I guess there could be more coming, but mm-hmm. that feels like... like that's got to be the last one. Were there any of these that were surprising to you?
So I not surprising in like the standard sense of the word when you think of like wrestling releases. Alexander Wolf is probably the biggest surprise of just like mm-hmm. why, just because like I thought he was doing really good work with Imperium, with
which
NXT,
he was kicked
right?
out of this week. On
that's
NXT.
Probably why,
yeah.
huh?
Yeah.
That's why you gotta watch NXT UK. But so like that one threw me off. There were some that they weren't stars or anything, so it's not shocking that they're released, but just kind of like you never actually got to do anything with them at all. So I know Brandy Loren is what's that dude's name? Joey Janela, that's his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And I knew like she had been like training or something with NXT for a while.
Yeah.
She but unfortunately like I don't think she ever like really had a big match or like was ever on TV or anything. The mm-hmm. biggest claim to fame that she has is she was one of the hot tub girls when Damian Priest won the North American title.
I mean, we all start as a hot tub girl or as one of Adam Rose's rosebuds.
I mean, right?
The people in those photos now to look at, it's like, look at all those world champions who are Adam Rose's rosebuds.
That is wild. But so that one was weird. Jessamine Duke, of course. To be fair, because Jessamine Duke is one of the like MMA horsewomen, so mm-hmm. for years that people have been pitching this potential match of the WWE horsewomen of Charlotte, Bayley, Sasha, and Becky Lynch versus the MMA horsewomen, Jessamine Duke was one of those names. But to be fair, I think of all four of those names, Jessamine Duke was the least notable one. But if this is not confirmation that we're not getting that, so.
Yeah, that's an interesting one to be worded as her being released, because I think there's some nomenclature there where she was released as a performer, but it seems like with how tied she is to Up Up Down Down, I think she has confirmed this too. They're like,
has she been on Up Up Down Down a lot?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. She is. Well, she's been physically on it and is been the person producing it with Xavier Woods
really?
For like some time. Wow. And it seems like she is becoming a full-time content producer and video editor for WWE.
Wow.
So I think they needed to release her from that contract so that she could accept this new position is what it seems
like.
Oh,
so maybe they're releasing her as talent but keeping her on for something else.
Yeah, she's going to actually get, you know, Benny's now.
Wow.
So good for her.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Alexander Wolf one, he also cleared up. He went to Twitter and was like, my contract will expire on June 15th. So it seems like maybe that is a mutual parting of ways situation there. Yeah, he was attached to a lot of different groups in NXT and always did good work. So I feel like he is the most notable person to be released.
Yeah.
Vanessa Bourne felt like someone who they were always going to start promoting and then never did.
I know the name, and I'm sure I've seen like two or three of her matches on NXT. But
you've seen her in the Mae Young Classic a few times.
Yeah, she didn't do a whole lot more than that.
Yeah, she had a really good match with Serena Deeb. Young Classic. But I guess I feel like Drake Wirtz is the one who's been talked about the most recently. Yeah. How do you want to approach that on our podcast right now?
I mean, good riddance.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot that already came out in the dirt sheets about, this is one of those things where, like, he was clearly very unliked in the last year in the locker room. And once he got released, everybody came out of the woodwork to tell the dirt sheet stories about him. So those are out there if you want to see him. Just a word to the wise, no matter your political leanings, if you are going to call in to a government town hall hearing and passionately say something against the government there, you probably shouldn't do it with your company's logo on your shirt invisible the whole time.
Or backstage at work.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's 100% the reason why he was fired. I think that is like a fireable offense, even if, like, your politics were
creating
diversions in the locker room.
I bet that was the final straw. I mean, he's been in dirt sheet reports of being difficult, and so I bet that was them be like, look, dude, what were you thinking?
Yeah. Yeah, can't do that. Let's go from that departure to another departure. I guess I could actually use that for any of these three remaining news items, but it would be in poor taste for
one of them. Would be in very poor taste.
But you know what? He probably would appreciate it. Okay, we're going to that one now. Now that I said that, we're going to talk about the death of New Jack. This last week, Jerome Young, who is known to the wrestling world as New Jack, died at the age of 58 of a heart attack. New Jack is one of those people who are probably the most, like, prominent in that group of most prominent people to never wrestle in WWE. Mm-hmm. He is probably he's probably one of a kind, right? I'm trying to think of someone to compare him to in a modern context.
I mean,
and it's like maybe Nick Gage.
I was going to say Nick Gage is the closest I can think of.
In that they're like ultra hardcore with a legitimate persona of being frightening.
Exactly. Yeah. Hardcore guy that legit seems crazy and, like, would probably stab you.
Yeah. He's a complicated guy to talk about, to eulogize on this show, because for every thing that he did that was innovative, and I think he did do a lot of innovative things as a wrestler, even if his, like, technical wrestling ability was limited, for everything that he did that was great, and for how, like, funny and fun he could seem in shoot interviews, he's also, you know, he either, like, worked everyone and we all bought his stuff, or he lived the gimmick. Like, he was exactly who his character was in real life. Yeah. Which is, like, you know, a murderer.
Yes. Yeah.
How do you balance, like, New Jack the person versus New Jack the character?
I mean, it's the issue of trying to balance any performer and in almost any entertainment field that, you know, the work that they have created. You have to find a way to separate it from the person that they are, because sometimes the person that they are kind of sucks.
Yeah.
So, like, for wrestling, I mean, your Chris Benoit's, your Velveteen Dreams, your Marty Scurll's, like.
I feel like New Jack is a cut below them in terms of problematic.
True.
Abilities.
Yeah.
I don't know, though. It's
well, but
weird.
Like, they've never, like, legit tried to murder someone in the ring. Like, so.
Yeah, and New Jack has done that. Twice,
so
at least three times, notably.
I don't know. Like, I honestly, like, I'm not super familiar with New Jack's work besides his notorious moments that you know, like, people hear about. Do you? I mean, you are far more versed in the old school ECW than I am. Do you remember, like, watching him when he was in ECW, like when he wasn't doing all these crazy notorious things that get reported about 10 years later?
Okay, here's how I. Because I feel like a lot of people listening probably don't know who New Jack is. So let me give you, like, the three things that he did as an innovator in the three notorious moments that stained his legacy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he, in Smoky Mountain Wrestling, where the booker was Jim Cornette, this was like an incredibly rural white promotion.
Smoky Mountain Wrestling.
Yeah, yeah. And New Jack came in and decided as a character with Jim Cornette, like, we have a lot of like backward ass racist people who are fans. So why don't we make you as New Jack the epitome of what scares Southern white people? Like when they picture scary black person, even if that is a stereotype or like a not a real person anywhere, New Jack was going to play him, which is funny because he ends up playing like a gangster rap, I think Build from Compton, like gangbanger, but he is from South Carolina. Like he is like totally entrenched in this type of community his whole life. And then it's like, okay, I will play. Yeah. And it's like, I'll play the California guy. And he incites riots with these promos. He is like an underrated promo. Right after the OJ trial happens, he does this promo in Smoky Mountain that I recommend for everyone to watch, where he goes, shout out to my boy OJ. That's two less white people we got to take care of. And it's the reaction is astounding. And so, like, if you're in on the joke with New Jack, his promo work is amazing because of how ludicrous it is. It's so over the top that it's ridiculous. The other two things that I feel like are notable for him, beyond his kind of creation of the backyard style of wrestling, despite never wrestling in backyards and disowning that, he, you know, made up for his lack of wrestling ability with his use of crazy weapons like staple guns and sickles. I think he's the first person to use those two things. And he had the Ice Cube song Natural Born Killers as his theme music, and it got people into such a frenzy that they wouldn't stop playing it when he got to the ring. They literally would play it on loop his entire match. So, like, New Jack matches feel like an event because they look and sound different than any other performer ever. So those are, like, and like, his stage dives. Like, that became his big move, was jumping off of balconies. So those are kind of the amazing things that New Jack brought to the table, this level of violence that was very real because it was. And that great strength was also his great weakness. ECW almost gets its first pay-per-view canceled because of the mass transit incident. I don't know if we've talked about that on the show yet.
I don't know if we've gone into it, like in depth of what happened, why it happened, how it happened, but
yeah, we probably shouldn't do that right now either. But like, a person lies about their age and their ability of wrestling training to get into a tag match on an ECW show, and says something backstage to offend New Jack. So in the ring, New Jack intentionally cuts this person really deep and they almost die. So that happens in the mid-90s. And then in the mid-2000s, he's wrestling for a upstart hardcore promotion called Extreme Pro Wrestling that was trying to take ECW's spot on the way back. There's a Dark Side of the Ring episode about this. I think there's also a Dark Side of the Ring episode about the mass transit.
I think so.
Incident. Yeah. And
New Jack's got a couple episodes.
There's a scaffold match where New Jack tries to throw a performer, Jack Victory or Jack Grimes. I can't remember. They look very similar. But there was a person who had injured New Jack in a previous match, and New Jack, instead of throwing this person off the scaffold into the, like, 20 tables in the ring, has said on film that he intentionally tried to throw this guy out of the ring so that he would die. and then there's also Gypsy Joe, I feel like, is the last person that he had one of these matches with, like a real indie match. And he was wrestling an 80-year-old guy, Gypsy Joe, who was being too stiff with him. And the crowd was becoming racist and chanting epithets. So New Jack, like, straight up assaulted this guy in the ring. And that's the kind of person that he was, and I think that he was the kind of that way unabashedly, for better or for worse, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I recommend, though, like, go find some the Gangsters versus the Dudley Boys matches in ECW. Mm. They are wild. do you want to steer us into another departure, Tyler?
Yes, yes. A slightly, I don't know if it's happier, but it's more optimistic departure.
Yeah.
Also, in our time away, we found out that the what seemingly was a very kayfabe angle of Daniel Bryan's match with Roman Reigns on SmackDown for the Universal title, where the stipulation, if Daniel Bryan leaves or Daniel Bryan loses, he is removed from SmackDown, basically no longer works for WWE. And we have seen this angle 100 times before. We have, I'm sure we have covered it in episodes before about loser leaves town matches and things like that. But in an amazing twist, it turns out it was very real, actually. Not the stipulation that if Bryan won, he would have stayed, but Bryan's actual contract with WWE was set to expire. It had already expired, and he was
expired the day after that match, I believe.
It was the day after this match, so
quietly found that out.
Yeah, and honestly, I thought it was excellent. I really did. Like, what a way to go and like subvert this like decades old wrestling trope of the loser leave town match and actually leave town. Like,
well, I thought this was a non-story. But then I did see that he is selling shirts on Pro Wrestling Tees, which the winner of our contest might be able to buy, that are that are Bryan Danielson shirts.
The American Dragon, he's back.
Yes. And these are new shirts. These aren't just like shirts he had lying around from Ring of Honor. These are new shirts that look similar to his, you know, branding in WWE, but with Bryan Danielson. So my question to you, Tyler, does this mean our prediction of him wrestling elsewhere is going to come true, or is this all just, is he just taking a break?
I don't know. There's potential for everything here. Cause to be fair, this isn't the first time a WWE wrestler has started selling, things on Pro Wrestling Tees. And yes, he is released from the company, so he is actually very much gone. But I wouldn't take that as like the definitive yes, he's gone and he's not going back. I don't know. Like, there's I don't want to spend too much on it, because like there's too much potential here for incredible things that could happen, and then he could also very much just go back to WWE on a limited schedule. So it's
I don't think he's going to be okay with
waiting to see on this.
You don't think he's confirmed now as the surprise entrant in the Double or Nothing Casino Battle Royal?
Well, so here's the thing. I was talking to Sarah about this last night, and we were speculating who it would be. Honestly, I feel like that is too small for Bryan Danielson. Like,
correct.
If you're going to hire Bryan Danielson to AEW, you can't debut him in the battle royal that's going to happen like first up match on the card or maybe second. Like, Bryan Danielson is a post main event angle. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. So then let's not speculate too much on this. It's just TBD right now, and also,
but to be fair,
definitely behind time.
Bryan Danielson in the G1 would be incredible.
That, you know what, I feel like that could be maybe the one thing that he could say to WWE: look, I'm coming back, but I want to go do this one very specific thing before that happens. And I think, dude, they would probably be like, yeah, it's fine.
This is totally like side note here, but man, there is some potential for the G1 this year, my man. Bryan Danielson, Samoa Joe.
Yeah, it could be a Ring of Honor just reunion.
I'm for it.
Go get Loki out of MLW and put him in there. What's Xavier doing? The first Ring of Honor champion.
Oh, man.
Or I guess second? I don't know.
I don't know.
He was like the one guy who didn't make it out of that group. Actually, now I'm like, is he still alive? Now I feel really bad.
I feel like
I maybe heard him
recently.
Oh,
not like
gosh,
very recently,
I'm terrible.
I
he died
like
on
I...
August 16th, 2020.
That's what I remember hearing about it. Yeah.
Sorry about that. Moving on.
Moving on.
This is one thing that we're not going to be able to explore for fully because like more is coming on, but we'd be remiss if we did not talk about the announcement from Tony Khan that AEW Dynamite will be moving from TNT to TBS in 2022. It's another Turner network, but it is a very different branded Turner network. We're also going to have a third hour-long show called Rampage that will debut there on Friday nights at 10, so right after SmackDown ends. Curious timing. So there's lots to unpack here, but the big question is the move from TNT a promotion or a demotion for AEW?
I mean, I don't know about the numbers or anything, but I would guess promotion. I think more people watch TBS than TNT.
I might go against you on that. I think that there's probably more money in original content going to TNT than TBS, okay, if that makes sense.
Okay.
TBS though has always had like amazing reruns of like big comedy shows. So like maybe you're right, maybe they're
My other thought is I think TNT to me feels more like the sports market.
Sports and drama. Yeah.
And TBS is the comedy market. So this also is a slight worry of mine, like, oh no, are we gonna get more out there silly things?
But yeah. I think it will be the wrestling show on the comedy network. I don't think it'll be a wrestling comedy show. And like here's why I think I almost feel like Tony Khan asked for this specifically. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you why. Because TNT is the sports network, you know, we've had Saturday Night Dynamite and other nights that there have been random Dynamites, and those have been fun, but it's because the bread and butter for TNT is NBA on TNT, yeah, and inside the show with Shaq and Charles Barkley. Their show wins all these Emmys and everyone watches it. Well, now TNT also just announced that they've bought the regular season rights to the NHL. So that's another night So I think that they probably were like, if we go to TBS, we won't have to be preempted. And maybe that's enough to do it. Although they're still going to have four special episodes on TNT a year. So that I know earlier I had predicted that AEW would have more pay-per-views. I think maybe this skirts that issue. That now they really feel like super shows. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
So here was my thing. When I first heard that, I was very upset because I thought that it was going to be four new pay-per-views. And look, I'm sorry, man, but in this day and age of watching wrestling, like $50 for a pay-per-view is pretty steep.
It's a lot.
Having to do it four times a year was rough enough. If they upped it to eight, like I can tell you now, there is no way I'm picking and choosing. There's no way I'm buying eight $50 pay-per-views a year.
I think there would be tiered. Like there would be ones that are 50 and ones that are like 25, but still, but that's a lot.
If these are just going to be four like specials that air on TNT or TBS, like much like they did like Blood and Guts or all the other random specials, like I'm totally for it.
I think it'll be Fighter Fest and Beach Brawl Break or Beach Break or Halloween Havoc, or I guess not that one. But
do they ever get Starrcade?
I don't know.
I don't know if they got Starrcade, but.
No, because I think WWE has run a Halloween Havoc and a Starrcade in the last year. But they'll do like those kind of branded things.
Last question on it though. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen to the TNT
title?
Is it only going to be defended on Rampage?
No, I think
are we getting the TBS championship?
I think it should stay as the TNT title.
Yeah.
And I think someone as a comedy character should create a TBS title, a la the FTW title that is not real and say that.
I mean, honestly, I think it's slightly more logical if they turned it into just a TV title. So it can be defended on both logically.
The Turner Network title.
Well, you see, that was my other thing. Keep the TNT, but it's Turner Network title. And I'm just like, oh, I hate it.
I think that is what TNT stands for. It's like Turner Network Television.
Well, I guess that works.
I mean, I want there to be a TCM title. Turner Classic Movies title.
They only defend it in like old school catch as catch can rules.
Yeah. Ben Makovitz talks for 25 minutes before the match about the context of it.
Yes.
Yeah, it'll be great stuff.
Oh man.
All right, so I'm sure there'll be more news on that particular item to come. But we got to get into our two top 10 matches if we have any like chance of getting
right
out of here tonight.
Right at 30 minutes. You were about right.
I was so right, and I wish I was wrong. All right. So we're going to start with the top 10 matches of the year. Correct? Yeah. So we're going to be going over these again. The way that these were voted on, we're looking at work rate, storyline going into it, storyline during it, impact of it within its company. Did it create lasting moments that we're going to remember for the rest of time? And Tyler, you and I vote, our votes ended up being weighted, I think, the lowest that they've ever been weighted ever in the history of our doing this too. So our impact is less felt, so I think that's fun. And Tyler also knows the top 10 matches but does not know what order they are in.
Yes, and right. I forgot that's how you do that.
So were you very confused? You're like, wow.
I was very confused of what was listed number one, and I was like, I mean, it was a good match, but really?
You were like, I don't understand this. Also, like, all the B's are at the top. great. So let's hop right in then with number 10.
Number 10.
Thank you. Great.
I thought I'd do that.
Yeah. We didn't coordinate that, so that's good that worked out. We were just talking about AEW Saturday Night Dynamite, and this was the main event of the first one of those. This was on August 22nd, so I guess 2 days after the death of Xavier. And this was in Daly's Place for the TNT Championship, the Turner Network Television Championship. And this was Mr. Brody Lee versus Cody. This was the match that notoriously Brody Lee won the TNT title during.
The squash heard round the world.
Yeah. So it's interesting that a match that has squash-like tendencies made our top 10 list. Tyler, why do you think this was... I think everyone wanted a Brody match to be on the list this year. Why do you think this was the one that ended up making it?
To be fair, like I also felt that as well. I wanted.
Yeah, this was in your top 10
list.
This was personally, right?
This was my number 6 match of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And for multiple reasons, well, again, I'll absolutely say one of them. I wanted to put a Brody match in. And he did have some good matches. I recall the one he had with Moxley. For the title that you and I gushed about, that we thought was excellent.
Yeah, that was the one that was on my list for this.
That match only suffered from not having a full crowd. But I wanted to put the squash because I remember watching it live, and I remember the reaction I got from watching Brody squash Cody Rhodes, and. Not knowing, but hoping that Brody would win and get that belt, because Cody had it for a very long time. Cody was beating people every week, all these like new people showing up and stuff. It felt like it was time for Cody to give up the belt. Brody needed something to do. He had been in the company for a while and he hadn't quite gotten the push. There, all the stars were aligning. So I had the feeling that Brody would get the belt, but at no point did I think, yes, Brody's going to go out there and squash like the poster boy of AEW, the face of this company, in 3 minutes and just demolish him. I loved it.
It was similar in like a shockingly effective storytelling match to like the SummerSlam Brock Lesnar versus John Cena match, right? Where like John Cena just like didn't get a single offensive maneuver. And this felt similar to me. Like I was so sports entertained with this match, and I think retroactively it is so nice to see Brody Lee just dominate the whole time and get this championship and get to close the show. And there's all this business after the match too.
Yeah, the beatdown angle and all of Dark Order showing up. Like, I loved it.
You get to have Brody Lee have an impromptu post-match interview with Tony Schiavone as well, where he gets to talk about all the types of people that have held him down over the years. So there's great acting work and promo work from Brody. There's great selling from Cody. A lot of people get involved, and it does feel like a monumental moment that was on a that main evented an important and successful show for the company as well. So I think that this will be the highlight. Like, images from this are going to be used in the highlight of Brody Lee in AEW, correct?
Yeah.
Is that fair? Yeah. Alrighty. So then moving on down the list, we're going to be quick with this year. And we're onto a match that could not be any more different than the last one. Coming in at number nine. This took place at AEW Double or Nothing 2020, and it took place at TIAA Bank Field in Jacksonville, Florida. This was the Elite versus the Inner Circle in a Stadium Stampede match.
The Stadium Stampede.
We're going to get a replay of this in just a few weeks at Double or Nothing 2021. We're going to have Stadium Stampede 2. So I guess first thing is, like, Tyler, where does this rank for you in the pantheon of cinematic matches? And then follow-up question, is there anything left for them to do for the second version of this match?
Oh, man. So I don't know where I'd rank it in cinematic matches, because in the last 5 years, we have seen a lot of cinematic matches. This one was great. When I went back to, like, you know, do some more research on it and stuff, get ready, my initial note that I put down was, I don't know if I can call it wrestling, but I was thoroughly sports entertained.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's a lot of potential for the Stadium Stampede 2. Just if they are going to do it again in the stadium, they got a whole stadium to work with, and we've also shown that they're not afraid to go backstage to the bar or the executives lounge or anything like that. So
yeah.
I think they can come up with a whole lot of stuff. But this first one, I don't know if it was wrestling, but it was super entertaining.
Yeah,
it was one of the funniest matches I'd ever seen. I remember just laughing throughout the entire thing. It was so great.
I was gonna say it's funny that after coming out of the Hardyverse, that that most of the cinematic matches we've had in the last 2 years are, like, deathly serious. And this was the only one that was, like, 100% comedy, and it felt like a throwback to some of those, like, quote unquote hardcore backstage matches at the height of the Attitude Era in WWF. Like, it felt a lot like WrestleMania 17, Raven versus Kane versus Big Show, where, like, it's not a wrestling match, and they're just, like, going through different places and doing gags backstage. I think that this one had the added bonus of also being a parody of football, right? And there was a lot of really, like, twee and cute jokes about that. Do you have a favorite one?
My favorite one was Jericho and Aubrey having to check the replay on the two count.
Yeah, throwing the challenge flag.
That was challenging that was the call to play. Oh my god.
Yeah, I think the fireman suplex throughout the snap suplex that goes
the Northern Light suplex.
Sorry,
the 100
that's what
yards.
It was. Yeah, the 100 yards of that. The moonsault off the goalpost.
Yes,
you had a lot of, like, football stuff baked in. Just the, like, starting lineups, like, everything aesthetically. Yeah. Like, it seemed like everyone got to have a lot of fun making this. So it just worked out for me. The location specific stuff was really funny. It was funny to cut back to the pool in that ridiculous stadium, and Matt Hardy's just floating
going through the versions of Hardy.
Yeah. I think somehow the Hardy and Santana and Ortiz were actually the best part of this match for me.
I don't know. I mean, they were excellent.
I guess Sammy Gidden.
Hangman was so entertaining. I wasn't sure because I had to ask Sarah because I couldn't remember. Did Hangman show up on a horse?
He did.
Or did he just show up running down the, like, from the 50-yard line to hit a clothesline?
He showed up on a horse because Sammy was both chased by man on horse and man on golf cart in this match. Yeah.
But he also at some point did a spot where he just like was running from like the 50-yard line to the end zone and then hit someone with a clothesline or something.
Yeah, that was also a thing that happened. I believe he also got the chalk line apparatus and went over top of Jericho's body.
Oh wow. I don't even remember.
See,
that
there
one.
Are so many little bits in this match that is worth
I remember the,
a rewatch.
The bar fight. Him and Hager had the old school Western bar fight where they stop to have a drink first and then start brawling.
Yeah. There's a lot of just wonderment in that. Yes, I think that why it works so well too, this is a tiny thing, but the fact that they had live commentary for it and that the commentators were laughing and having fun too, rather than treating it seriously, made it work. And I'm curious to see if the second one is going to be treated really seriously.
Well,
based on Blood and Guts,
the feud is so much more serious, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like Blood and Guts was a very serious, like, you know, blood feud, pun intended, but even just with the promo that Jericho dropped last night and what MJF has been saying, like it doesn't seem like it's funny at all. So I'm curious to see if they lean into the comedy of this match for the next one or
It's gonna be interesting.
Yeah.
It's funny, moving on to number 8.
Oh, sorry, number 8.
That we have 3 matches that I would classify as being like sports entertainment matches in a row, because coming in at number 8, this was from WrestleMania 37 Night 2 at Raymond James Stadium, Tampa, Florida. This was Bad Bunny and Damian Priest versus Miz and Morrison.
Okay, see, and Andrew's list, this was number 1.
Listen,
and I
alphabetical.
I was like, wow, I mean, this is a very good match, but
you're like,
really?
Settle down, people. this one came in at number 6 on my list. I don't know if it was on yours. I don't believe it was.
Let me check the list. It was not. It was not on my list.
But the fans loved this one. We talked about that this is, do we think we put this at second best celebrity involvement match?
So that for me, I put in my note, this is tied for the best celebrity match I've ever seen. It's tied being with the tag match, Kurt Angle and Ronda Rousey versus Triple H and Stephanie McMahon. Just because, again, when that match happened, we were very much, we didn't expect too much out of it. Granted, Ronda Rousey wasn't even a celebrity, really. Like, she was a combat athlete. So I had even higher hopes for that match than I did for Miz and Bad Bunny. And that match just excelled every expectation. They did so good. And this match, again, I guess by those standards, this one might be slightly better because I had lower expectations.
Expectations
for this
were
match.
Zero.
Yeah.
Literal zero.
Wow.
Yeah, this match should not have worked. But Bad Bunny put in the work to be a believable combatant in the ring, and Miz and Morrison should be commended for making him look that way too.
What a showing for Bad Bunny. That was my other thing.
He wrestles most of the match as the legal man.
I remember when we reviewed WrestleMania and we talked about it, like this, an interesting thing about this match was it completely subverted that celebrity involvement trope of the actual wrestler, the hand, spends the majority of the match in there and then eventually gets the hot tag to the celebrity who maybe gets a spot or two and then we're going home. But no, Bad Bunny wrestled the majority of this match and like he took bumps and like it was an amazing showing for him.
And I think I'd be remiss if we did not also talk about the amazing amount of commitment as performers for Miz and Morrison to do that entrance with their rap song with all the bunnies. I think that should be commended for like working the way that it did, because that could have started everything off on a terrible note.
But also for how ramshackle those costumes were put together. There was by the end of the song, there was like four bunnies missing ears.
That's amazing. I didn't even realize that.
We were counting the ears falling off like as the entrance was happening. I was like, oh, that guy's got one ear. He's got one ear.
Moving on to number seven.
Number seven.
We've gone from the three lowest work rate matches to probably the highest work rate match on this list. This was from New Japan Pro Wrestling's Wrestle Kingdom 15 Night 1 at the Tokyo Dome in Tokyo, Japan. This was the betrayal of Will Ospreay. This is Okada versus Ospreay.
Yes.
I feel like it's okay for me to kind of spoil that this is the only New Japan match that made our list this year.
Okay. That's fair.
Yeah. What was your biggest takeaway from this match?
So this was my third ranked match of the year. I'm not gonna try to pretend I am a fanboy for New Japan wrestling. I gravitate towards that particular style of wrestling. And I loved this match. It was and it's crazy to say this, especially for a Wrestle Kingdom where generally every match is going to be 5 stars. This was definitely match of the night, probably the match of both nights.
Yeah, I agree. It was a 35-minute match, which I guess is light for this,
which is a light for an Okada match. Yeah. 35 minutes. I really enjoyed the storytelling that they were telling through here, and it was very much Okada being the head of Chaos, the faction that he leads in New Japan, that Ospreay has been in for years now. And in these 3 years, we have seen Ospreay's ascension from the light heavyweight guy who would only go for
the super junior,
exactly. Did all the junior stuff, and then most recently in this last year and a half or so, he started putting on more weight, putting on muscle, with intentions of moving up to the heavyweight division.
Really changed his style in the ring too.
It's
a stark difference.
Very. And so this match was that story of Ospreay having made his ascension now to compete on the same level as Okada. Could he do it? And I loved a lot of the spots that they did in this match. It was like a tiny thing, but if you were like paying attention, there was a lot of callbacks to AJ Styles specifically. Mm-hmm. So Ospreay hits a phenomenal forearm at one point. I think Okada hit a Styles Clash.
Yeah.
So I loved those callbacks. The overarching story that I was pulling from this match was Okada just constantly trying to lock in that Cobra Clutch. And the entire match, to me, was about Ospreay finding ways to avoid it. Yeah. And yes, towards the end, he started going for more Rainmakers that Ospreay continued to avoid until the end when he got caught, which cost him the match. But
yeah,
it was just great wrestling.
It also had, like, for New Japan, a pretty big, American style storytelling within it too. Of like, this was a match of like the difference between confidence and arrogance, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And that Okada is confident but doesn't disrespect his competitors, and Ospreay saw Okada succeed and mistook what the secret ingredient was, he mistook confidence for arrogance.
Yeah.
And it's the moments that he is showboating that open up windows that Okada takes advantage of that leads to him winning this match, which I think is amazing. And I think that Ospreay's performance in this match is probably what convinced Gato to give him a run with the IWGP title.
Unfortunately has already been prematurely ended.
That got bumped from our news item that he just relinquished the title yesterday due to injury, which is only the second or third time that this has happened. So, all right. Moving on to number six then.
Number six.
This also came from WWE WrestleMania 37 Night 2. This was the main event of main events for the WWE Universal Championship. This was Roman Reigns defeating Edge and Daniel Bryan in a triple threat match. Tyler, you on the night after WrestleMania said this was the best match at WrestleMania. Do you still feel that way?
I do.
With like a month to sit on it. Yeah,
I do. This was this. So actually, this was my number 7 match.
No, so it was my number
like
8.
The
so
listeners liked it a little more than we did, but I still thought this was great. My note that I had put, this match makes me love triple threat title matches.
Yeah.
The triple threat matches, they can get like a little oversaturated, and like the storytelling sometimes isn't as crisp because you're not focusing on just two people, but like the potential for great spots and constant action to always keep you on the edge of your seat is always there. And I thought they did such a great job in this match, and especially it was heightened so much more by the fact that this just happened to be a WrestleMania main event, which made it so much better.
Yeah, I thought this one did what WWE does the best, which is leave us with clear visual moments in our memory, right? Like, we're all going to remember the double, you know, crossface on Roman Reigns. And I think the concertos at the end are vicious. And I think the double pin. Yeah, the double pin and the double missed clothesline, or not clothesline, spear, the like spear versus spear, which we had joked about being the build for this match, that then when it happens, they like blow each other up.
Yep,
and I think that's like great. Roman won this 22 minutes and 40 seconds. I think in the moment, I was shocked that we weren't getting a happy, you know, moment to end the first post-pandemic WrestleMania with either Daniel or Edge winning.
I think we were both confident that we didn't know who was winning, but it wasn't Roman.
Mm-hmm. But now I really agree with the decision to keep it on Roman.
I thought the same, man.
Yeah.
Like they always bring me around. I hated it in the moment. I didn't like Roman winning. I especially hated him pinning both of them at the same time. I thought that was unnecessary. But now, like, given Roman's story arc and where they're taking the character and where I can start to see they're doing it now, like, I'm okay with it. I thought it was great.
Roman as the tribal chief has grounded SmackDown. And, like, we know that that is the thing at the center of the story, and it's made for really good television.
Best storyline in WWE right now.
Yeah.
Hands
down. Like, the value of him as a dominant heel champion is, like, undeniable right now from a storytelling or merchandise perspective.
Yeah.
I think this was maybe the best Roman match at WrestleMania ever.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair to say.
Great. Moving on to number 5.
Number 5.
This came at AEW Full Gear 2020. It is the highest rated tag team match on our list. And it was the Young Bucks taking on FTR for the AEW Tag Team Championship.
Excellent.
Oh, boy. This was a match how many years in the making?
Oh, I would say it's safe to say like since 2015.
Mm-hmm.
I think FTR was starting to get big in NXT around 2015, something like that.
Yeah, that sounds about right. It's also like it's probably the most anticipated match that made our top 10 list, like looking at it, like based on the build. And the build is also organic and mostly outside of normal wrestling storytelling conventions, which I find really fascinating. This was really similar to the Young Bucks versus Kenny Omega and Adam Page match from the previous year. Is that fair to say?
I would say similar, but honestly, it's not as good.
No, I was going to say similar. Maybe I should say why I think it's similar is that there were a lot of callbacks to the other tag teams that brought these two teams to where they are now, right?
Yes.
There is like callbacks to DIY, and this actually becomes a match about FTR's slogan of take the ball
fist,
and run.
No flips.
Yeah.
And that was I was gonna say that the best storytelling part of this match was in their hubris. FTR cost themselves the title. The finish of the match is the FTR has been working over the legs of the Young Bucks so they can't do their super kicks and stuff. And Cash Wheeler finds a point where one of the Bucks is down, and he decides to go for a springboard 450 splash,
mm-hmm.
which is very not like FTR.
It's just a lot of flips, no fists.
That's a whole flip. And he misses it. He eats it. And that costs him the match. That gives the Bucks the opening to hit a super kick on him for the win.
Mm-hmm. Super kick without a boot, too.
Without a barefoot super kick. I guess that makes it super effective.
Yeah.
But so I loved that storytelling part of it. It was excellent. It was excellent.
I think I don't know if I said this when we first talked about this match on the show, but Dax Harwood's full-on punching the turnbuckle was the most like brutal thing that I feel like I saw this year. I also liked that like their fists were taken away early in the match.
That was the match where like his hand was bleeding most of it, right?
It was like he got color from his hand.
From his hand.
Another really tiny thing that I thought was cute. I've been using that word a lot to review these matches, but this was a cute thing, was that the you know, residents of Rancho Cucamonga were wearing Lakers colored tights and the FTR, not from Boston at all, but like wore the Boston Celtics colored stuff. And I thought that was a fun, because like that rivalry was also known for being prim and proper and classic versus Showtime Lakers. So I thought that that was a nice nod to a similar feud. Mm-hmm. We got to just keep going. We're going at a good clip here, a good money clip. Number four. This was another main event of a major pay-per-view. This was the main event, in fact, of night one of WrestleMania 37, and it was for the WWE SmackDown Women's Championship. This was Bianca Belair defeating Sasha Banks, the boss, and the first night back in front of crowds for WWE. Mm-hmm. We talked about this one recently. But do you have anything else you want to add, or what is kept like in your head about this match since WrestleMania?
Yeah, so I feel like something that we forgot to mention when we reviewed it originally after the match happened was something that I realized afterwards, that there is some like important like history to this match. This is officially the second ever women's WrestleMania main event in history.
Mm-hmm.
And I that totally went over my head when it was happening. But it is, and I think that's definitely something important and something amazing that both of these women got to be a part of.
And something we did talk about was that it was the first time that two black competitors main evented WrestleMania against each other for a world title.
Yeah.
So that, like, sometimes these like first don't, they feel like fabricated, and this one felt actually of value.
Yeah, and it's again that retrospect of realizing this match checked a whole lot of boxes of like firsts and like historical moments. Mm-hmm. So
it
was really good. So I think that held it. For me, still, like, I think the moment I'm always going to remember from this match is that opening like 10 seconds where the bell rings and both characters break kayfabe to smile and like really just take in that moment of all the fans finally being back after a year of nothing, and here they are main eventing WrestleMania. Like, it, those real moments that just, they transcend the performance, they transcend these characters, and you see just these people, like, it's it was, you, that's what I'm gonna remember.
You know what else was really real in that match?
Oh, the hair whip?
Sasha's scar from that hair whip. Yeah, I mean, this match knocked out the first 3 minutes and knocked out the last 3 minutes. And, like, that, I think, makes it a perfect WrestleMania match in my head. It's funny. I feel like the moment that the agents probably thought would be the, like, the highlight real WrestleMania moment was Bianca gorilla pressing Sasha over her head and walking up the stairs. But I think, like, the hair whip has actually kind of beat the moment, right?
That was she's been doing that hair whip for years, and that was definitely the most brutal that has ever been.
These two had an amazing complementary style to each other that I didn't anticipate. They are money together, and I can't believe this was not one of the matches run back at WrestleMania Backlash. But hopefully we'll see another iterate, like Sasha versus Bianca.
Has Sasha been back since?
No, I think she's taking some time.
She's taking some time off.
She's Mandalorian.
Filming season three of The Mandalorian.
Yeah. Speaking of three, next up is the number three match in our list. I should say that the top four matches, the Bianca, Sasha, and the next three, were all like far and away the top four matches voted on by the fans.
Okay. Okay.
So like, even though we put a lot of these four in our top, like the fans very much wanted these four matches as their top four.
Gotcha.
So going to number three.
Number three.
This took place on free TV on October 29th in 2020. It was in the BT Sports Studios studio in London for the NXT United Kingdom Championship. And this was Walter defending against Ilya Dragunov.
Sure.
What do you got to say about this one, Tyler?
This match. This might... So I'm going to start. This match might be the most brutal match I have ever seen. And I'm including hardcore death matches. Like, it's... Oh, my God. There was no blood. None of them got color. There was no blood. But
he got
this
some,
was,
like... He got some blood blisters and some.
There was some internal bleeding, I'm sure, yeah. But there was no outward blood. But this still is probably the most brutal match I have ever seen. And I watched it back again recently.
I watched it back today.
It's Dragunov's screams are what hurt me the most.
Yes. Yes, Tyler. I wrote down a note. I was like, is this the best vocal performance in a wrestling match
ever? His screams are what hurt me the most, because like just from the start, the match starts off in the most like non-traditional pro wrestling way. It feels like an MMA match when it starts. Bell rings, the guys rush each other, and they're throwing strikes. Now, they're not like, you know, 100% full-on MMA strikes, but they're definitely not worked punches. They are not worked punches. They are hitting each other. They move right into one of the corners. It's just very violent and aggressive and thrashing about in a way that you can tell is not faked to an extent. So... there was that, the screams. My main note about this match is that the fact that there was no crowd there was no one in the audience, made this match.
Yeah, I'm not saying it worked better for it.
I'm not saying exactly. I'm not saying it would have been worse were a crowd there. I think the crowd being there and getting responses might have even made it better. But the fact that there was no crowd there is what defined this match, because you got to hear the hits and the chops and the screams and everything. This was hands down the best match of COVID wrestling, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think this proves more to my point of Walter as the Hannibal Lecter of wrestling, of like evil big guy who acts very proper, who is then suddenly put in a ring with a insane person who feels no pain and will continue to come forward no matter what. I don't know how Dragunov doesn't get blown up in this match at all. Like,
it's a long match. It's like at least 23
it's 23 minutes. Something I noticed in the rewatch today is that Walter rarely takes his eyes off of Dragunov, including after the match. Like, he beats him, and then a lot of the like post-match stuff is him just like looking at Dragunov and taking in like who this person was and and how hurt they are now. Very serial killer vibes. Dragunov takes a bunch of bumps where one leg gets stuck underneath himself before he bumps, and that is like the most realistic looking thing to me. That looks like MMA being knocked out.
That's how you go down.
Neither of these guys wore knee pads, which made it feel even more violent. I don't know that I've ever seen someone combat a clothesline. Like, Walter is winding up a clothesline at a certain point, and Dragunov has the brilliant idea to counter this clothesline by clotheslining his arm. He counters the clothesline with another clothesline. This is the most violent thing without weapons since, like, Vader versus Cactus Jack on WCW Saturday Night. I love this match. This was my number one match of the year. I think you had number two or three. You had it up there.
This was my number two match.
Um, if you haven't seen it, go watch it, but also go watch on WWE's YouTube page. They have this match with commentary by
from Shawn Michaels and Sheamus and Drew.
And Tyson Kidd has a lot of great stuff to say in there. It's really cool. Highly recommend. We got to keep moving, though. We are behind the times. Number two. It's funny that we just said the number three is the most violent match of the year because the final two are definitely hardcore matches. I don't know what that says about us in quarantine, that this is what we've gravitated towards. But number two was from WWE Hell in a Cell 2020 in the Thunderdome, Orlando, Florida. This was a Hell in a Cell match for the WWE SmackDown Women's title, and it was Sasha Banks defeating the evil soccer mom, Bayley. This, now they finally have a match that can be put in the same breath as their NXT Brooklyn match, classic. Banks won this at 29 minutes and 26 seconds with the bank statement while foot stomping a chair so that it would continually hit Bayley in the face. To me, this was the appropriately violent ending for a feud as prolonged and personal as this. I think we kind of forget that the critical reception to this storyline had been like really up and down throughout, right?
Yeah.
And I think maybe like the quality of this match made us forget that.
For me, this was another situation of, again, if you just give WWE the benefit of the doubt sometimes and give them the time to tell the story that they're intending to tell, sometimes it pays off and it works out. Now, I'm not saying do this all the time, because most of the time they don't know what story they're telling.
Yeah. In fact, most of the Hell in a Cell matches in the past few years have been awful, but like the good one has made our list every year.
but even like, I mean, like for this feud of the Bayley Sasha feud, like there were definitely ups and downs to the story where people are like, oh, why did they do this? Why did they do this? And this was the best logical payoff that we had to it. But I mean, I really enjoyed this match. I think in terms of Hell in a Cell matches, like it may not be the best Hell in a Cell match I've ever seen, but it was very good. They did some really innovative, like creative spots there. One of my favorite was Sasha hit that Meteora she does with her knees to Bayley against the cage wall that looked really cool.
Yeah. I liked Bayley the most, you know, even as a heel, like the most you know, I like the most violent she should be getting is just being like, I want to speak to your manager, and like her doing New Jack's 187 finisher with the diving chair elbow onto Sasha on the ladder. It just makes me smile.
It just makes me smile.
Yeah. All right. You know what else makes me smile? Gives me a big old bloody smile that ends up becoming on a top-selling t-shirt is our number one match of the year.
Number one.
Which the fans overwhelmingly voted for this as the number one match.
I love this because this was my number one match as well.
This was also the... Actually, I was going to say it was the last match to take place in the window, but I guess non-WrestleMania last match to take place in our window. It was on AEW Dynamite on March 11th, which was the St. Patrick's Day version. Sorry, I'm getting a phone call. Someone's trying to interrupt my moment here.
They don't think that was the number one match.
Yeah, I guess not. But the number one match was a unsanctioned lights-out match between Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker.
Yes.
What do you want to take the leads on this one?
Sure, I will. So, oh man, this match. I loved this match. I have to preface it with saying hardcore wrestling is never my favorite. I don't consider myself like a purist in terms of wrestling, but like I've just hardcore has never been my thing. I appreciate it for what it is. It can be a spectacle. It can, as a storytelling device, sometimes it's needed in really heated feuds. It's never my favorite. But this was my favorite match of the year. And damn, was it hardcore. I think for many reasons, like, To me, the match itself was excellent. They did some really great hardcore spots. But I think the reason why I picked this as number one and why it held such a great place for me is that this was one of those matches that as it's happening, you start to realize you're like, this is special.
Yeah.
And in the aftermath, you very much realize you're like, that was important. What I just saw was important. It was memorable. Like,
it was a moment.
It was a
and
moment.
And we knew it
exactly.
Instantly. Yeah. Yeah. I feel that same way about hardcore wrestling with you, where there is a very, like hardcore wrestling that isn't hardcore enough feels silly to me, and
yeah.
Hardcore wrestling that is like combat zone wrestling, you know, levels and above is too much for me.
It's for me, it's a thin threshold. Like,
this was the middle bear. This was just right.
It was just right.
And it was like it followed the same kind of beats that Mick Foley's, you know, great WWF hardcore matches followed. To like rising to that level of violence and then not going over it. But it's probably the biggest level of violence seen in a women's match on TV ever, right? On TV.
I would say, yeah, in TV, like, there's been some super violent matches that, like...
Like Lufisto and
well,
Candice LeRae.
Like Candice LeRae has had... we've talked about it before vaguely, but if you somehow stumble upon that match that Asuka had with Minoru Suzuki,
yeah.
Like,
yeah. Oh yeah.
But this was in terms of like hardcore moments. And for me, it was the blood. Mm-hmm. I am not used to seeing that level of blood on female competitors. I've only like once have I seen Candice LeRae like just covered with the
gushing
crimson
mass. Yeah.
And this was, so I was not used to that. Britt Baker was bleeding all over the place. It was all over her face and her mm-hmm. hair and her eyes. Like, oh.
Look, this was a star-making vehicle for both of the competitors. They were both made from this match. There was no title involved. In fact, mm-hmm. it was on free TV. One of the wrestlers isn't even signed to the promotion. It was
unsanctioned. It doesn't affect either of their records in any
That's
way.
That's true, I guess. There was real consequence to the moves and weapons used in this match. I felt like the violence mattered. This tied Charlotte versus Becky at Evolution as the highest-rated U.S. women's wrestling match ever, according to Dave Meltzer.
Yep.
And
still didn't give it 5 stars, though.
No, he did not. but it... This... I think that AEW owes a great debt to Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker, because this was an important response from AEW as a company in the wake of the ill-received Exploding Ring barbed wire death match.
Yes. Yes.
They said, we hear the criticisms.
That's a very good point.
And they then said, we are going to give you the match that you were hoping for there. Mm-hmm. And this was it. And that is incredibly impressive to be done by two wrestlers who have no history of being hardcore wrestlers at all. So I think it makes perfect sense to be the number one match. I will blow through a few of the honorable mentions, the other receiving votes here.
Sure.
In this order, the ones that just missed out were O'Reilly versus Cole in their unsanctioned match, Cesaro versus Rollins at WrestleMania, Ibushi versus Jay White at Wrestle Kingdom, Omega versus Phoenix on Dynamite.
Yes.
Mox versus Brody at Double or Nothing. Orton versus Edge in the greatest wrestling match ever.
It made it.
Yeah. Best Friends versus Santana and Ortiz in the parking lot brawl.
Yep.
Roman versus Owens, the last man standing. I feel like if the handcuff botch didn't happen, that would have made the list.
Yeah, that would have been higher.
Yeah. Adam Page in the Dark Order versus Inner Circle at the Brody Tribute Dynamite.
That was for me. That was in my top 10.
Omega versus Mox at Winter is Coming. Thunder Rosa versus Serena Deeb on Dynamite. And Deonna Purrazzo versus Jordana Grace in their Iron Woman match on Impact, which I had not seen, but is very good. It's really good. Yeah, so we are an hour and 12 minutes in. We got 2 segments left to do. We're going to do it. It's going to be great. And we have someone who's been waiting patiently to get in here and use her voice. Do you want to set this up, Tyler?
Absolutely. So we figure we are about to break down our top 10 wrestlers of the year. I mean, the woman who needs no introduction, our AEW correspondent, Sarah is on the call.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. I couldn't figure out how to turn it off mute, and I was like, oh, God, we're already off to a bad start.
I had a feeling that might be what was happening.
But yes, it is me. I am here.
Sarah, how are you?
I'm good. It's been a busy day, so
yeah. Yes.
We're making it work.
Mm-hmm. Are you ready to break down your favorite wrestlers of the year with us?
I am excited to listen to y'all break it down and to give my input. I will say I've been sitting on this call just on mute for a bit, and I felt really creepy just sitting here and listening and like making small comments to myself as if I was part of the conversation. So I'm excited to actually be part of the conversation this time.
Yeah, you'll be less creepy. You'll be less like Dexter Loomis just sitting there while Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell are having their massage talking about how much they hate him.
Exactly. Yes.
If you saw NXT this week, that would make a lot more sense.
That would make a lot more sense.
Yeah. Did you have... Were there some things you were going to tell us about corresponding on AEW in particular before we got into this?
Well, I will just say I'm really happy about the number one match.
Great.
That being Britt Baker versus Thunder Rosa. I think that one was, I put that on my list, or it was at the top there somewhere, but that made
I
me
wanted
really
to
happy.
Ask you about that because I know you to be someone who is incredibly adverse to the more hardcore elements in wrestling.
Yep.
So what was it about this one that stood out or felt different?
Maybe it's hypocritical, but I just really liked that it was women doing it. I don't know. Women do go through like lots of pain all the time. Like childbirth, right? So it just feels like this was just like, hell yeah. I don't
about
know.
About time they get some praise for
exactly,
it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I've also just always been a big fan of Britt Baker, and I just think this was really good for her, and I'll talk about it when I talk about AEW stuff later, but I was really happy that this made it at the top.
Wonderful. Then should we hop into the top 10 wrestlers of the list? Yikes. I'm gone crazy. I've hit that hour 15 mark, and now I'm like, I'm delirious like Ilna Dragunov at this point.
Let's get weird.
Yeah, we're going to breeze through these. We're going to Tyler breeze through these. He did not make the list this year.
Maybe next
coming
year.
Coming in at number 10.
Number 10.
This I will say this is also the most diverse list that we have had ever.
Okay.
And this person is a diverse wrestler. She was the AEW Women's World Champion for 323 days in our eligible window. So it's none other than Hikaru Shida coming in at number 10.
The Full Metal Champion.
The Full Metal Champion. Her win-loss record during this window also was 33-5.
Wow.
That's a really impressive record.
Very.
Did Shida show up on your list, Tyler? I imagine that she did. I know you are a big Shida fan.
So for me, Shida was middle of the road, number six wrestler of the year. I think again she had an incredible showing this year. It is only unfortunate that it happened to be during COVID when she didn't get to perform in front of the full crowds and things. But to her credit, she carried the women's division throughout arguably the hardest time that wrestling has ever had. And being the champion for almost the entire time, I know next week, they've already announced that next week is going to be her year anniversary as the champion. So she is a year-long women's champion, which I think is already, that's an incredible achievement for her.
It does seem... Mm-hmm.
I was just saying, I mean, she had some very good matches, and again, they were only hurt by the fact that there wasn't full crowds there, which to me is probably why they didn't stand out more. But again, she held down that women's division.
We do think that the division has kind of caught up to her in recent months, where she was kind of well out ahead of everybody. I know that, Tyler, your favorite AEW women's wrestler is Shida. And I know, Sarah, that your favorite AEW women's wrestler is Britt Baker.
Next weekend will be contentious.
Yeah. Sarah, do you think this is the time that it makes sense for the title to change hands?
Absolutely. I think I mentioned I think I said this to Tyler, and I think it was said on the podcast, like, right after Britt's match, I think I said something along the lines of, like, you know, Britt doesn't need the AEW championship, but the AEW championship needs her. I think it's good to give some new life into it now that fans are coming back. You know, you have a person who's mm-hmm. a great promo. And
the best.
Yeah. Yeah. Versus somebody yeah. who's just an amazing wrestler. And I think that this will be a feud that can last for a while, too. Like, I don't think we're going to see this match and then all of a sudden Sheeta and Britt are done. Like, we're going to get a few matches out of that. Yeah.
And I got to be honest, Andrew. Yeah, I think it's time for Britt.
I think it's time
as well.
I think it's time. My hot take is at least one match between the two of them will end up on this on the top 10 matches list next year. That's my hot take.
Hell yeah. Right.
Yeah. Moving on to number 9 then.
Number 9.
This person fell 3 spots from where they were last year on the list. This is another AEW wrestler. This is John Moxley coming in at number 9. Mox, some stats for you. He held the AEW World Championship for 251 days in the eligible window with a win-loss record of 34-5. He held the IWGP U.S. Heavyweight title for all 365 days in the window.
Mm-hmm.
So he was full of gold this year. How did you feel about Mox this year, everybody?
I mean, I think Mox is great. I enjoyed his title run. Again, a lot of my explanations on these people is going to be with the caveat of they were working during the hardest time of professional wrestling ever. So I think it with that context, Moxley's world title run in AEW was fine. He held the title for a very long time. He had some very good matches. Again, we've talked about his defenses against Brody was excellent. I really enjoy the defense that he had against MJF when MJF was doing his like whole campaign gimmick in the matches leading up to it, the promos leading up to it. So he had some great defenses. He had great matches. I think Mox is a really good promo. When he's not doing like his weird crazy guy gimmick to a comedic level, like and he's dial it back just enough, I think he's one of the best promos they have. But I don't know, like personally, and I can't explain any reason why other than like COVID stuff, like it didn't feel like this was that much his year. You know what I mean?
Did it feel exactly 3 spots worse than his year last year?
I guess so, which is weird because he didn't even have the title last year, so I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. I think it's good. It seems like other people are getting chances to shine too. And I've said this before. I really like Moxley. I think he's really awesome. I get why he has all the star power. But I also kind of get tired of it after a while.
Yeah.
So, like, it's, yeah. like, nice that there's, like, new things happening. But now it just feels like he's still doing the same stuff with the same people. But just doesn't have the belt on yeah. him.
Which is fascinating because he is a different character when he is in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's stark how different, like, his persona is there. And I wonder why AEW just hasn't had him bring that over, or am I overthinking it?
I mean, you're absolutely right. He definitely his New Japan persona is
the Death Rider,
very different from the AEW one.
Yeah,
I will also add, I don't know who else is on the list, but I think he might be one of the only wrestlers who became a dad this year. So that's exciting.
Not
anyone
yet.
Else? No. Well, he
actually, I think you're
soon.
Right. I think you're right, looking at the list. I don't think anyone else became a dad this year. There's at least one other dad on the list.
We have a dad on the list.
All right.
Yeah.
Next year, we'll have to do a list that's just the dads, the best dads.
The dads.
Wrestling.
Yeah. Best wrestling.
Titus O'Neil, number 1. moving on to number 8.
Number 8.
This person reached the pinnacle of their professional kayfabe, you know, top of the mountain this year. Number 8, one half of the Golden Lovers, Kota Ibushi, coming in hot.
Yes.
He won and successfully defended the IWGP heavyweight and IC titles on both nights of Wrestle Kingdom 15. He won the G1 Climax He held the tag titles also for 108 days in the eligible window with Hiroshi Tanahashi.
With Tanahashi.
Yeah. Kota Ibushi, it seems weird that like the year that he finally won the thing, that he is this low on the list. What gives, Tyler?
COVID, man. Yeah. Again, damn COVID stuff. But it's again, I think those accolades speak for itself on why he is in our list. And for me, Ibushi was number five. And so I think those accolades speak for itself. He was tag champion with Tanahashi, won the G1, main evented Wrestle Kingdom, won the belts at Wrestle Kingdom, defended the belts at Wrestle Kingdom. I mean, I think it's, again, it's unfortunate that he reached the pinnacle of his career and these achievements during this time, but he still did it, and those that still counts.
Yeah I agree with you there. I'm gonna keep us moving along then, if that's okay. To sure. number seven. This person yeah,
that makes this you person, think it's gonna be Trent, if only.
This person tumbled six whole spots from last year's
Ooh,
list.
No.
Which is kind of crazy to It's just because other people were really good. Like, this person had a great year. This yeah. person was Drew McIntyre.
Drew!
He held the WWE Championship twice for a combined total of 300 days in the window.
Yeah.
He had memorable feuds with Randy Orton and Bobby Lashley. I mean, he was the face of WWE this year, or at least Raw this year. How do we think, like, Sarah, how do you think Drew McIntyre was as a first time champion this year? Did he move the needle for you at all?
No, I've always liked him. He's great. Everything he does is really, really good. I always like his matches, but I didn't necessarily think it was anything overtly special, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
It's for me, I'm going to feel like a hypocrite in that my explanation of why I feel like other wrestlers are on this list is totally valid for Drew, in that Drew basically carried this company on his back for, again, through the hardest time of wrestling that we know of. And he was the champion. He was the face of the company through this whole time, basically. And he put on perfectly really good matches, but I don't know, like, yeah, there's some personal connection that I'm missing here that just, like, I don't even, yeah, Drew wasn't even in my top 10, and I feel bad saying it now, like, because he worked so hard. I don't know, something didn't connect for me.
I'm gonna push back that Drew carried the company, because I think he did fine. I think he didn't evolve the way that a few other WWE wrestlers on this list that we're going to get to did. And I feel like there are two people in my mind who really carried the company this year.
Exactly.
We're going to get to them shortly. Moving on to number six, then. Number six.
Oh shoot.
Oh no, did
you,
Tyler.
Did you clip out or did you just
Oh, maybe I did clip out. Maybe you didn't hear me. Number six.
Number six
is another person who carried a particular brand of WWE's umbrella this year, specifically NXT. This is Io Shirai coming in number six. She held the women's title for 304 days in the eligible window. A
lot of long title reigns this year.
Yeah.
She's so cool. She's just cool. Like, I want to be her when I grow up.
What? Yeah, she has, like, an effortless, like, coolness, right? Because, like, she has, like, a hard character to define, but she just, like, is cool.
Yeah.
What are her favorite moments of Io Shirai from this past year?
Man, I loved her match with Candace.
At tables, ladders, chairs, and scares.
you put those two in any match, and you're gonna get a bunch of stars. That was really great. I thought her WrestleMania takeover match with Raquel Gonzalez was pretty good. She didn't get the win, but like it was very entertaining. She spent the year doing those great spots. Was it this year where she did the trash can dive from the top of the cage?
Do you know what I'm talking about? Yeah, I don't think it was this year.
Okay, but like,
she had a lot of great. She dove off a skull this year.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. To me, Io Shirai she does the spots, and they're just memorable and excellent. And yeah.
Yeah, which is why, in my opinion, she's the best high flyer in WWE. Come at me, Ricochet.
I think he deleted that tweet. I can't argue with what they've had Ricochet doing recently.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, I think he deleted that tweet. Moving on to number five then. Number five is a wrestler who competed in only 7 matches this year and made our list. He is the self-proclaimed, sorry, that's not true. He's the me-proclaimed Hannibal Lecter of professional wrestling. He is Walter.
Walter
held the NXT UK title for all 365 days of the window.
And he's going to do it for another 365.
I want him to go for like another 900.
At me.
Walter, a man without a finishing move, a man who is a throwback to like an era of like pre-television wrestling of like, he is like Bruno Sammartino-esque. He wears boring trunks. He doesn't wear knee pads. He is like such a throwback and puts on consistently excellent matches. And that's why he's on this list. Why is this working so well where Brock Lesnar doing the exact same thing wasn't working?
Because, okay, hold on. Because Walter has shown that he is far more capable in the ring than Brock Lesnar. Maybe it could be argued that Lesnar is a better character, and like Lesnar maybe he's even a like an equally good promo or something. I don't think so, but Walter can do so much more in that ring, and Walter understands like storytelling in the ring, and like it just, I don't know. I don't think that's a fair comparison.
I'll also add 2 things if I can.
Go ahead. Yes.
The first is, I think Brock Lesnar is almost like the pretty boy version of Walter. Like he just kind of looks like golden boy, while like
Brock
Walter's
Lesnar
like,
would be so upset with
and
you.
And this is my second thing. I'm like legitimately afraid of Walter. Like if I saw him, I would be afraid. Mm-hmm. I'm also legitimately afraid of Brock Lesnar, but more so Walter. So I think that adds a little bit to him too.
Yeah. Walter's scary.
yeah.
I just want to see. I want to see him sit down and be interviewed by Mads Mikkelsen now, because that is who my Hannibal Lecter is. He just gives me the creeps. He had 7 matches, but they were all 4-star matches or higher. Like until he stops putting on bad matches, I'm gonna keep putting him on my list.
Do you think go ahead.
No, that's I just yeah. no, that's, that, he's good.
Do you think he like can take a joke? Like he seems really serious all the time, and I like wonder if he laughs or like
yeah.
like
maybe. I think that is like him playing into the stereotype of Austrians and Germans.
Okay.
of like the idea of like
so
Germans
serious.
Don't laugh. I think he's actually probably pretty funny.
Mm-hmm. I think it's him. Yeah, he's sticking to kayfabe really hard. To his own betterment, like I can't think of any video interview what have you where I've seen Walter laugh.
Yeah, he definitely makes some jokes in the promo video for his match against Tyler Bate from the year before. Like he says some things that are definitely jokes. They're just like he just doesn't laugh after them, which makes them more terrifying.
It's a crazy person.
Yeah. So going from someone who doesn't laugh to someone who loves to cackle,
number four is
a WWE wrestler who did not have a match at WrestleMania.
I'm so sorry, Sarah.
And still made it onto our list. It is Bayley coming in at number four.
Bayley.
She held the SmackDown Women's title for 213 days and the WWE Women's Tag Team title for 86 days in this window. And she really, like, came into her own as her heel, Karen, mm-hmm. I want to speak to your manager character. She debuted a talk show. Ding Dong Hello started this year. Why do you think Bayley made the list this year despite not having that, like, exclamation point at the end?
So for me, and this is part of what I was going to say with the Drew thing. For me, and this might be crazy, Bayley was my number one.
Yep.
Bayley is my number one wrestler of the year because she carried the women's division and WWE as a company through the COVID era of wrestling. Her story with Sasha of being the SmackDown Women's Champion and then them getting the tag belts and then Sasha having the Raw Women's title and the story of them coming together as a team, running the division, carrying the company, eventually imploding, feuding, like it kept me watching WWE when watching professional wrestling was so difficult.
In the wake of WrestleMania, as like lockdown was starting, WWE was suddenly without an audience and without a lot of their most prominent wrestlers, and Bayley and Sasha Banks and Asuka, for my money, were the three people who kept weekly WWE afloat. And I think there's a reason that they were like appearing on every show for a while, and it was because they were the people who were evolving their characters and were being reliable in the ring and outside of the ring. And I think that they deserve everything to me.
Yeah. And I think the fact that she didn't have a match at WrestleMania, it was a travesty.
I don't understand how she didn't end up on there.
Yeah, I don't like Bayley's characters particularly that much. Like, I've never been like big old Bayley fan, but I will say I respect her. I think that she has had I'm a new wrestling fan, and no surprise, but like I've always heard about her and how well she's done and how hard she's worked. So
to be fair, Sarah didn't like her at all. Face character either.
No. Yeah, I think that's fine. It
appeals to me, or it's really intended to appeal to me. Mm-hmm. So it's okay.
Yeah.
But she's still a really hard worker, and you can tell.
I think she also like is so much more comfortable being a villain now than she was last year in like trying to become heel, and it just did not work because that's not who she is. And I think she's so comfortable.
She found her heel character, like as so many wrestlers do when they finally make the transition to a heel character after they've only been a face for years. Sometimes it feels like you don't know what this character is yet, but in this last year, I think she found it.
Mm-hmm.
So going to someone else who, after years of being a face, finally found a heel character. Mm-hmm. Coming in at number three.
Number three.
He's a man whose pants are definitely being held up because he has collected many a belt. He is Kenny Omega, coming in at number three on our list.
Can we call him the cleaner? Is the cleaner back, Andrew?
No, I think this is a distinctly I think it's a distinctly different heel character than the cleaner. He's not the cleaner. Me. I think the belt collector has a different kind of arrogance and self-importance that the cleaner maybe didn't have. Kenny held the AEW World Championship for 163 days in the window. He had a 36-7 win-loss record. He also held the AEW Tag Team titles for 163 days and the AAA Mega Championship for all 365 days in the window. I did not realize that he had that title for this long.
I forgot about it.
Yeah. I think, though, and tell me if you guys agree with me or disagree with me on this, the reason that the most important thing that Kenny Omega did this year as a character was change the wrestling landscape by opening the Forbidden Door.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, undoubtedly.
Is that fair? Yeah.
Undoubtedly. for what we have already seen come from it, him going to Impact, him winning the Impact title, of course, but also all of the potential that this now gives us for things to come.
Yeah, he didn't shut that door. He left it open, and people Blue Justice has been like, "Oh, I'm going to walk through this," and other people.
Very much.
I also just feel like it's a testament. I mean, you wouldn't have Kenny Omega do this, where he's wrestling for all these different promotions, taking their titles, you know, constantly traveling to places in order to do it, if he wasn't both a really amazing wrestler and B, really good to work with. Like, people like to work with him, and like, and you're not gonna have, if he's like a jerk, they're not gonna, promotions aren't gonna put their top belt on him and let him leave, you know. Like, he's just, he's obviously got to be all that and more, and I think that speaks a lot to him too.
I think you're 100% right on that, Sarah.
And he's a proven draw. I watched weekly Impact for the first time in years this year. So
yeah, same. Moving on to a wrestler who found and evolved a heel character after years of being a face.
This is a theme.
This is a theme. Number two.
Number two.
Is the man at the head of the table. The tribal chief, our Lord and Savior, Roman Reigns.
Roman!
He held the Universal title for 224 days in the window. And he debuted this character. He got it from The Fiend, correct?
The Fiend.
He got won it in a triple threat between The Fiend and Braun Strowman.
Right, right. Okay.
Yeah. Roman was my number one wrestler of the year, which is a statement that if you had told past me that, I think I would not believe it, but there's a lot about this year I would tell myself and probably wouldn't believe. Do we all love Roman now?
Yes.
Damn it.
We do.
Damn it. I love Roman. They got me. Dang it. WWE, you got me.
And it's not just Paul Heyman. Like, Roman Reigns, the performer, has taken a huge step up in confidence this year for me as a actor and a person who does promos. And I think he is terrifying to me in a way now that is legitimate, right?
I feel it. I do. I think for me, and weirdly, the biggest progression I've seen in Roman in the last year is... Like, we've known that Roman is a good wrestler. He's just been a victim of bad booking and things like that. But in his recent, like, heel run as the Tribal Chief, he's been given the opportunity to show that. Like, the match he just had with Cesaro, I mean, shit, what that was, at least went like 20 minutes or something. No interference, no heel shenanigans. They just had a really good match, and Roman won clean. Like, I'm all for this new direction of Roman.
He's also, if I'm not mistaken, he was out for the first part of this wrestling year because he went to WrestleMania, and he refused to come until more COVID things were under control.
Yeah.
So,
can I be political on the show for a second?
Absolutely. Always.
If you must.
Sarah, his refusal to work the first 6 months of the year was a big reason why I put him number one.
Sticking it to Vince McMahon.
I really appreciate Roman as a person this year a lot. I think in a year where other people on the roster have shown their whole ass in being not leaders, and being irresponsible, I think Roman Reigns has led by example this year, and I hope that means that everyone else will fall in line. I know that's his like catchphrase, but like,
that's
his... but I think that like him, like
art,
like if it was just
life, man.
If it was just being a good person this year, like him and Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens would be the number three people on the list. But Roman had the best wrestling year out of three of them, so he's number two.
Yeah. All right. Of course, that means at WWE made him a heel, just to point that out. But yes.
Yes.
Can't have you liking him too much.
I had to get a jab in there. We can keep going.
Yeah. Well, we've only got one person left. Mm-hmm. The number one wrestler of the year is someone who found a heel persona after years of being a face. That's not entirely true. It's kind of true. This is
They've
a person.
Always kind of been a heel.
Yeah. This is a person that Tyler and I last year predicted would not be in WWE anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And now was the person who held the company together the whole year, mm-hmm. and was the most consistent worker. And it was number two on my list. I think it was, where was this person on your list?
It was Tyler, number one. B.
Number one B.
I subverted the rules slightly. I had a 1A and a 1B.
And this person won the fan vote by like something like 60 convoluted points.
Okay.
So this was a runaway for the number one wrestler of the year, the boss, Sasha Banks.
Sasha Banks.
She was the WWE Raw Women's Champion for 26 days and the SmackDown Women's Champion for 167 days in the window. She was the Women's Tag Champion for 86 days, and she main evented night one of WrestleMania 37. Sasha Banks found love in a sport that it seems like she had none left for. All that being said, how many people do you think voted her number one because they like The Mandalorian so much?
Oh, I mean, there's definitely got to be people in there. But to be fair, she did really great in The Mandalorian. Like, they got to bring her back for season three.
Yeah.
She's just super entertaining. Her look is really eye-catching. Like, everything about her is just, like, you know, attention-getting and,
like
You remember her, you know what I, like, it's just, you just do. And so I love that she's at the top.
I do too. I think that her wrestling also took it up a notch this year too, where she has become like she's always great in the ring, but I think there had been a question about if she was safe in the ring, and now I think those questions are gone. I think she has been incredibly consistent this year. Maybe she just needed that time away. So then I will finish our top 10 wrestlers by asking this question. She seems like she's been gone for a bit now since WrestleMania. How do we hope to see Sasha Banks return?
I mean, I guess it depends how long she's going to be away. Again, there is, you know, the trope, absence makes the heart grow fonder. So, I mean, the longer she stays away, the more people are going to want her back. I would... If I'm fantasy booking this, I would like to see her show up like a few months after Becky returns.
Yeah.
And then that be a good feud for both of them to get into.
Yeah, I like that.
I'd like for her to win a WrestleMania match because
yes.
That's a great point.
End year thing for Sasha Banks.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Can I give you my crazy fantasy booking?
Yes.
I want next year's Women's Royal Rumble to start and for Sasha's music to hit and for her to return as the number one entrant, and then for Becky Lynch to hit and return as the number two entrant.
You want both of them to stay away until the Rumble?
Yeah, they've earned it, and I
that's
think
that's a long time, dude.
Not only have they earned it, but I think that this is a critical point for, you know, not pun intended, for WWE as AEW's women's division is getting better and as Impact's women's division is getting really good to make sure that they can build stars out of people that are not the Four Horsewomen this year. That should be like the number one thing that they are trying to do.
I mean, that's true. I don't know. That's a long way away.
Yeah. Ooh. But I think that, like, clearly this is a performer who can get burned out. Like, there's a world where Sasha Banks would have been CM Punk, right?
Yeah.
And, like, they got to do whatever they can to avoid that from happening.
To keep her there, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tyler just wants Becky to come back. That's the
I
real
just
reason.
Want her back. Why is she gone? Like, come back already.
That's the only thing. Yeah.
It's hard to agree to come back and start taking bumps again, I feel like.
Yeah. Sure, sure. When you absolutely don't need to.
I'm going to run down the honorable mentions really quickly. Yes. Not that we're going over at all. The people who just missed the list this year were, in this order, Finn Balor, Mr. Brody Lee, Randy Orton. I was shocked that Randy Orton didn't make the list this year. I could have seen him getting on instead of Drew.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, Asuka, MJF, Thunder Rosa, Britt Baker, Hangman Page, The Fiend, Darby Allin. I was shocked that Darby Allin was that far down on our list. Followed
That's
by
pretty
Eddie.
Far down, yeah.
Yeah. Followed by Eddie Kingston, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Chris Jericho, Edge, Cesaro, Orange Cassidy. Also shocking to me that he...
Wow.
But I will say that all these people were within like 6 votes of making the list. So these are all the people that were in striking distance. And then Deonna Purrazzo as well.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's a great list. We've only got 2 things left to do now. We're going to announce the winner of our contest, but we have something we're going to do first, correct?
Yes. First, we want to send it to our... wonderful AEW correspondent Sarah, who's been waiting so patiently to
incredibly
tell us
patiently
just some of her favorite moments of AEW in recap of the last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should we picture like I Will Remember You like playing underneath this? I guess this isn't an in memoriam. This is just like
Don't
let me interrupt
forget
anymore.
About me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Tyler, when he was saying, hey, how would you think about doing this? He just said, yeah, just pick your best moments. And that was like way too vague for me. I needed a little bit more. So, you know, I just.
See, I thought if I tried to narrow it down, you'd be like, I don't know.
So, you know, I have taken a little bit of a different approach. You know, wrestling is more than just matches and wrestlers. So I added some top categories, or I guess superlatives, if you want to call them that.
Ooh, I like that. I like superlatives.
And, you know, I obviously have to do it from the AEW because I'm like a whole huge AEW mark. And just, you know, that's all I watch really of weekly television. So, I'll do that, but if any of these superlatives, you can think of a good other promotion one, feel free to throw that in too, so we can get some good representation.
Oh, I like that.
So, the best thing that I hated at first, and then I loved, or I love now, so, you know, when it first happened, I was like, this is good, I need this to end, and now I love it, is Max Caster rapping. I think it's super entertaining now. I was so against it when it started. I like didn't even watch. I was upset, and now I'm obsessed.
That's my answer too.
That's a good callback because Tyler said that on mic before you got in here.
Oh my gosh, really?
That's definitely my answer.
For me, is it like is the reverse of that superlative? Is it retribution?
Okay.
That I liked them a lot at first and then hated them.
Now you hate them.
That's fair.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have best just what the fuck moment when we were just, I don't know if I can curse on this. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, you're fine.
But best,
don't worry about it.
Best what the beep moment. I remember watching this at the beginning of COVID and both Tyler and I were like, dude, it's COVID. What's wrong with you? And it's when they first started letting fans back into the shows. I think it was towards the beginning of COVID, right? When
it was pretty
AEW
quick.
Started having people. And when they started letting fans back in for AEW, when Jon Moxley entered through the side and a fan just charged him. Does anyone else, do you remember that?
Yeah.
Well, so that was during COVID.
I think so.
Okay,
yes, it
cool.
Was.
Yeah. We remember that, and because the story coming out of it was the security guard who tackled the fan is apparently like Moxley's go-to security guy and has done that many
His
times.
His personal security?
That's
yeah,
great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just a good moment. Like, I mean, it was a weird moment, and we were like, this is totally uncool. They shouldn't be doing this. But then they started having that security guard come out with Mox every single time and, like, weirdly following him around and being in a circle, and I just really liked it.
It absolutely wasn't, because, like, we've seen fans rush performers in wrestling forever, but I think it was the added layer of, like, we were pretty fresh into this global
shouldn't
pandemic
be touching each other.
Where we're being told to don't touch other humans, and we were like, what are you doing?
And there was, and it's go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, I know exactly what the WWE winner of this superlative is.
Let me do this really quick. I also just think of all wrestlers to charge, I wouldn't charge Jon Moxley, because I think he'd actually, like, kick your butt. So, like, you know, other people make sense. Like, they might be more gentle. But, like, Jon Moxley, like, he squared up for a second. Like, he was ready to take someone down. I think the security guard was protecting the fan in that moment. So.
Mm-hmm. I think we can all agree that the WWE winner of the superlative is Rey Mysterio's eye being popped out. Right?
Oh, yes, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yup.
The eye for an eye match didn't make our top 10.
Yeah. Oh, so close.
Closer than you think.
I have a best botch. And, you know, I don't think this was by far the craziest botch or just, like, insane, but when Matt Sydal came out and was Superstar Press and then just totally botched it, and everyone
totally
was like, no, but at the same time, like, I think he handled it well. He get right back up there, he did a different one, and now he is in the same match that he had last year in Double or Nothing, so I think he's gonna get his chance to make a comeback.
They have
to
address it.
Maybe he does, like, intentionally fall. Who knows?
Well, I don't know if they'll do that, but, like, when he comes out to make his entrance, like, maybe he immediately climbs up to the top to go for another shooting star, and then, like, has a pause and, like, looks out to the crowd,
like,
and,
make
like,
sure
shakes
his feet are positioned.
Either that or, like, or, like, shakes his head and just hops down, maybe. Like,
I don't know. Is there a good WWE botch that comes to mind? Or they just don't botch in that promotion? No, I'm kidding.
Nothing is fun as that one. No one got hurt, and, like, it didn't seem to, like, super adversely affect him. It was just unfortunate.
Yeah.
I think it's the handcuffs that wouldn't come off.
That's a good one.
And Kevin Owens. Fascinating.
That's a good one. So my best debut is a bit of a hot take, because I thought Miro's debut was just, that's who I put. But I know most people probably would say Sting. And I agree that Sting was a nice, cool, big surprise too. But I was just, the Miro debut completely took me by surprise. And it was the first time a wrestler debuted who I actually recognized in my limited experience with wrestling. So that was exciting for me. But most people would probably pick Sting.
Yeah, that's tough. I probably would bring Sting.
Yeah.
Okay. Who would you pick, Tyler?
I don't know who I would pick, but I probably wouldn't pick Sting, because I'm sorry, like, I wasn't super hype about the Sting debut, and I'm kind of still not. So
yeah,
I know I'm sorry. People are gonna be upset with me, but, like.
So the best debut was Shaq.
Best debut might have been Shaq. Yeah.
Well, now that you mention it, my best celebrity spot in AEW was Shaq, but my all-time best wrestling celebrity spot was Bad Bunny this year. So,
yeah.
Speaking of which, that Shaq match was not bad.
I know.
No. Yeah. People didn't vote for that one, but it was pretty good.
Not bad.
It was a lot better than what people were expecting it to be.
He was more mobile than I expected. Like a 7 foot two, like 800-pound man. I know he's not that big, but, like, he is a big guy and he's pretty old. Yeah. So,
and they've definitely hinted at him coming back. So I don't know if that's the last Shaq match we'll get.
Well, as far as we know, he's still in that. Or no, he's not in the ambulance, because he Undertaker teleported out. So
he used Shaq Fu to get out of there.
To teleport.
Okay, yeah. I'm in my last few. I have my best person outside of wrestling in AEW, and I just have to say it's Hangman, because I looked up what all of the wrestlers in AEW donated to political campaigns, and he donated to Bernie. I am fully here for Hangman. I love his tweets.
I got you. You mean like the as people, as actual people. Humans.
Stevie Waltz.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
To break
wrestling.
The fourth wall.
Stevie is a great guy.
Yes.
Yeah. This is the weird one that we can speak to personally, that he is one of the nicest people that I've ever met, not even category wrestler. So he is a doll. And don't look up what everyone else donated politically to in AEW.
I'm unhappy about it, but it's okay. Yeah, yeah. So best tournament TNT title at the beginning of quarantine. I think this was, I just want to put this on the list because, Tony Khan had like 3 days to figure out what they were going to do to keep Dynamite on TV. And he put mm-hmm. together an entire tournament and they filmed it all in 2 days. And then they just didn't do things for a while. So I think big props to them for that. And that was a good tournament. There were some good matches and it ended.
Would we have said the women's one if we had all actually predicted it well at all?
Maybe. Perhaps. Best injury comeback is Britt Baker. She was injured at the beginning of COVID and still was on TV every week and did really well and ended up with the number one match according to Much Ado listeners for this year. And so I think that is in it and of itself. She didn't have to be on the list of top 10, but she did a really she had a good year.
I think, that's for me the most incredible part about it is she never really left. Mm-mm. While she was injured and couldn't wrestle, that's when she really established herself as the best promo they have for the women's division. So she did excellent.
She took every opportunity that was given to her this year, more mm-hmm. than any person in any promotion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then this was, Tyler will laugh, I wrote just best, and then I didn't write anything. I just wrote best, and then Rey Fénix, and then I crossed that out. And I said best faction, Death Triangle. I think I was just trying to have an excuse to talk about how much I love Rey Fénix and Pac and Penta. And so that is my best faction. So is there a best faction in WWE that you'd give?
Retribution? No. I don't know. I guess the Undisputed Era.
I guess the Undisputed Era imploded,
but
though we saw the implosion of them.
I guess now that Roman's cabal of Usos is an amazing stable, and now Seth is kind of adjacent to the faction too. That's pretty great.
I like the Johnny Gargano, Indy Hartwell, Candice LeRae.
The Way.
I thought that was good.
Austin Theory?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I like that one a lot too. I agree with your assessment, Sarah, that maybe this next year is going to be the year of Death Triangle.
I hope
A faction and for them as singles competitors.
Yes.
I feel one of them could be AEW World Champion this year, but I don't know. It's weird because of Kenny as a logjam at top.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I wanted to get this one in really quickly. Yeah. That of all of those, the only one I wanted to say in a WWE comp to is person outside of the ring of the year is Sami Zayn, 100%.
Yeah,
to me,
that always is.
yeah.
and then I just have my best moments. This is what you actually asked for, so I think best. and I did a top five, so I'll do 5-1. And number five, they're all, most of them are promos, so
great.
Maybe this is the best promos, but five was Orange Cassidy debating Chris Jericho. That was a fabulous one. And particularly when Orange Cassidy didn't say anything the whole time and then went on a 2-minute rant about climate change. That was very exciting for me.
About sea levels.
Yes. when Trent and Chris Statlander returned, that, and Tyler and I have talked about this, we weren't the we didn't hate it, but we weren't like super enthused when Orange Cassidy got new music. And then at the end of that match, it was the Arcade Anarchy when both of them came back, and then they were all in the middle of the ring, and then the Pixies were just blasting throughout the whole place. We were like, okay, we're sold. This was amazing.
I got goosebumps, man. And I felt it.
That's when the you got to give the people what they want. And it was I say that I think every episode now. I just say that at some point.
I do say a lot now, a thing from Trent and Chuck E. T. of like, watch out, because this time he's gonna try. That is a thing I say a lot now.
Yeah. They're like runner-ups, best faction. They are so fun. They're entertaining beyond belief. So MJF turning on Pinnacle, that was...
They're turning on the inner circle.
Oh, sorry, turning on the inner circle and forming the Pinnacle. That was like... somehow unexpected and totally expected at the exact same time. So good. I think we just didn't expect it to happen so fast. We expected it to happen, but not as quickly as it did. And then it was just, it was great. Two is the, it's basically 1A and 1B, but two is the whole Brody episode. I think you've mentioned it on the podcast before, just how good it was. And how meaningful it was. And, you know, I think you can still kind of feel Brody's presence even now in May of the year.
Absolutely.
And so I think he's got to be on here. He's so good. And in more ways than one. And then my best moment in all of wrestling in this past year, maybe my life, I don't know yet, is MJF and Jericho's musical number. Maybe I've just been on a musical kick, but that was just like the best thing I'd ever seen.
Dinner Debonair.
Yes, the Dinner Debonair. When they sang, you know, MJF is actually good. Like, really good. That was just my favorite. And I had that, that was my
And Chris
top
Jericho
moment.
Sings in a band.
Yeah. He's okay. MJF.
But MJF is like clearly like theatrically, musically like trained.
Yeah. He was, and it was just, they had dancing, they had backup dancers. It was just, it was perfect.
I think that's the most mainstream moment that AEW had this year, too.
Oh, like, definitely.
Beyond Shaq. Like,
Didn't it get a Tony?
Yeah, it de facto won a Tony because someone who won a Tony for, I think for the deaf version of Spring Awakening.
Jeez.
Was like, they can have my Tony. So so they're officially a Tony
That's
winning.
Wild.
I also think it was like number one televised musical moment or something of the whole year on like the Washington Post or something like
yeah.
It was like it was or the New York Post. It was just like crazy. It was so good. So
yeah.
There we go. Best of AEW. This wrestling
you were
year.
100% right on those two. Like, you're right. We don't always talk about the moments outside of matches on this show enough, and those definitely were gigantic highlights that we're going to remember about this year for forever.
If I can throw in the tiniest little superlative.
Yes.
Best music of the year goes to Jungle Boy.
Tarzan. Okay.
Getting Baltimore, that was, oh man, every time that song plays, I love it.
Yeah, it's Taz's reaction to it, I think, is what makes it so good, honestly. Yeah. Oh, guys, Tyler, this was great.
Tyler was hates great. When they sing Chris Jericho's music, but he loves when they sing Jungle Boy's music, so.
It's not the same.
Yeah.
Baltimore is...
No, I agree.
You can't tell me that Fozzy is comparable.
I just want them now to get the rights for when Luchasaurus comes out to walk the dinosaur.
Okay.
I really want that music used, but we'll see. Okay, I think we have nothing left to do, right? There's nothing that anyone who would have voted on any awards are waiting for us to reveal.
Oh, Andrew, I think we've made them wait long enough.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, it's time to announce the randomized winner of this year's Pro Wrestling Tees $50 gift card. Side note to this person, I will email you this weekend with the card, so don't at me on Friday when you're listening to this. I will be at work. So our winner is...
Drum roll.
Oh, gosh.
I did it with my mouth. That was weird.
Hassan Magahi? There's no question mark at the end of that. I'm just sure that I...
Is he like Magahi? Trent? Has he got a gimmick?
Yeah. I'm sure okay. I just butchered your name. But Hassan, you won. You can expect an email from me on the weekend. And he also had really great taste, too. I'm going to reveal some information that his favorite match of the year was Thunder Rosa versus Britt Baker in the unsanctioned Lights Out match, because he said he'd never seen a women's match like that before.
My man. And
his favorite wrestler was Roman Reigns this year.
Good on ya.
Who he said he, quote, has not had a bad match since turning heel. And I tend to agree with that.
Dang it. He's right. That's
the point. He should be hosting this episode next year.
Yeah. I mean, he's in for
a new contest host, winning.
Yeah. He's in for 2 hours of of recording. All right. We've gone way over time, but that's okay. This is our longest episode of the year. Mm-hmm. Is there anything to plug out there in the world from us?
I got nothing.
Wonderful. Then as a reminder, wait, do you have anything to plug, Sarah?
No, I'm just studying for the bar.
Yeah. You're studying to be in the tag team between Cesaro and Sheamus?
Ideally, yes.
Yeah,
you have to study for it.
I'd prefer that I could be doing that, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great. Then, as a reminder, if you want us to answer your questions in the KFAVE 520, submit them to us on our website, muchadowrestling.com, or on Twitter at adowrestling, or you can go to our Facebook page, or you can email them to us directly at muchadowrestling@gmail.com. As always, we're going to leave you with the words of the immortal William Shakespeare. If wrestling be the food of love, fight on. Don't do any more because Spotify might not put us on.
You get 3 seconds.